You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, studies show women are interrupted more often than men in general. We'll find out about new research that asks, do women in high positions of power still get interrupted more or less often?
First, President Trump was clear about where his foreign policy priorities lie when he said this in his inauguration speech.
We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
The president's focus was on jobs for Americans and maybe the trade agreements and immigration patterns could get in their way. Throughout his campaign, analysts described Trump supporters as people not so worried about international policy, people that got the short end of the stick when it came to globalization.
But after speaking against getting involved in certain foreign trade and defense issues, Trump's policy seems to have taken a turn. He said he didn't believe in intervening in Syria, but almost 2 weeks ago, he authorized missile strikes there.
Our next guest says that Donald Trump isn't the first president to break from isolationist campaign rhetoric. It's been done by presidents from both sides of the aisle before. Julia Azari joins us now. She's an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Her research focuses on the American presidency, political parties, and political rhetoric. Julia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, paint us a little before and after Donald Trump the candidate and Donald Trump the president when it comes to interventionism in foreign affairs versus more isolationist tone.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's one of the challenges of describing this is to put these broad labels like isolation or intervention. So I want to talk a little bit about the justification. During the campaign, I mean, it was a very long campaign. We heard a lot of different things from the different candidates. And one of the things that was kind of a continual bit of rhetoric from Trump was his criticism of Obama for over-involvement, actually for previous presidents, for over-involvement in the Middle East. And that was part of his case for how America will come first. We won't spend money on other countries' conflicts. We'll turn inward. And then, what's really interesting about the justification for the airstrike a couple of weeks ago now in Syria was this kind of description of humanitarian impulses, right? So President Trump's stated reason for that was that he was upset hearing about the impact that the gas attack had on Syrian citizens, and he talked about children, and I think this actually really captures what often happens with presidents. In part, is there's this kind of pressure when there's a humanitarian crisis to do something, and so in that sense, although Trump is a very unique president in many ways, this is kind of a typical story.
Right. Talk about some presidents in the past who have come in on the message of, hey, we need to withdraw. We need not be so committed in the Middle East and elsewhere. And then in practice, did something different.
Yeah. So the list is quite long and it spans a lot of different kinds of conflicts. I think, as I said in the piece I had in 538, the maybe starkest example of this is Woodrow Wilson running in 1916 on the slogan, he kept us out of the war, and then getting in the war. Both Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon did this to a degree. Lyndon Johnson ran in 1964 on kind of a peace message. He claimed that his opponent, Barry Goldwater, was a warmonger, and then Johnson, of course, escalated the situation and U.S. involvement in Vietnam by a significant degree, to the chagrin of many people who had voted for him. And then in 1968, when he was running, Nixon promised to take rapid action to honorably end our involvement in Vietnam, and that took much longer than he had anticipated. Similarly, Obama criticized the Bush administration for its approach to policy in the Middle East, and then by 2011, finding themselves getting involved in that case in the situation in Libya.
Now, these are presidents from both parties. These are obviously all different situations with different nuances. But is there something about being a president instead of a presidential candidate that makes makes someone say, oh, maybe we do need to be involved in these world affairs?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things going on there. I think some of it is the information that you have when you're president, and this is information I don't have, obviously, but it seems like that's part of the story, is you obviously have access to much more security information. I think also it's much more difficult to get out of a conflict or to reverse course than it is to promise to reverse course on the campaign trail. And finally, I think that there's a real challenge for presidents of both parties, because the parties have somewhat, you know, as distinct as their ideologies are on domestic issues, there's somewhat less clearly defined ideologies about how to approach foreign policy. So for Democrats, I think it's really telling in 2008, when Obama was running, the Democratic platform talked about intervention in terms of it being multilateral, in terms of it being, you know, in consultation with Congress. It was all about process and not so much a doctrine of, okay, here's when we intervene, here's when we don't. And so Democrats, I think, often find themselves pressured by constituents who are concerned, who have this kind of interventionist spread of democracy idea. Republicans, too, but also by people who have a kind of national security orientation and are concerned in that regard. And then there are people who oppose war also in both coalitions. And so that makes the politics really messy for presidents to navigate.
Talking to Julia Azari from Marquette University, looking at President Trump and a lot of former presidents who had messages against intervention, military intervention and otherwise in foreign countries as candidates, changed their tune upon getting into office. Julia, you bring up in that piece in 538 a counterexample, the Bill Clinton presidency and the genocide in Rwanda. This is something that if you were talking about things from the perspective of American strategic interests, not a place that loomed large in our list. But President Clinton got a lot of criticism. It was one of his regrets not intervening there.
Right. I think that's really, again, sort of a telling example as far as how presidents face a bit of a double bind. It's worth mentioning that Clinton was also made that decision in the context of what had become a pretty unpopular U.S. intervention in Somalia. And so that was, you know, so that was difficult to sell, and that, you know, there was a lot of upsetting footage with U.S. soldiers in the streets of Mogadishu. I remember that pretty vividly, you know, really upsetting. And so that kind of shaped how Clinton approached Rwanda, and then the criticism he got for Rwanda approached how he reacted to some of the human rights atrocities that happened in Eastern Europe later on in his presidency. So we kind of see that the pendulum swing with one individual in the Clinton presidency, and really, I think, illustrates that there isn't a clear answer when we're convinced that there are serious security and human rights concerns going on elsewhere in the world. What do we do? What's the right thing to do? I don't know.
Yeah, so how does a president tackle that? I mean, we've got the rhetoric they came in with. We've got the lessons of the previous example, whatever those lessons might be. We've got the pressure maybe from the military insiders, the foreign policy insiders within a government, countervailing messages from the public and Congress. What's a president to do?
Right. I mean, I think that there are a couple of answers here. Some of it, I think, depends on the president's beliefs and values and the way that individual makes decisions. But I also think that and this is not a very satisfying answer, but I think it's correct. I think this is how things happen. It also depends on the political calculations and how the public will react to seeing images and hearing stories from certain parts of the world. I think it depends on the strategic considerations in terms of security, and I think, you know, sometimes also economics, commodities that come out of regions in the world. I think all of these, this is a political office, and I think there are ethical and moral considerations that go into those calculations, but I think it's also often a political calculus and a strategic calculus.
Julia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Been talking about the cases for and against intervention for presidents who often, not just Donald Trump, many presidents, she says, change their tune from the campaign trail to actually taking office in the White House.